Jump shot. It goes. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King, for this show. Our Tuesday show is kind of our Monday show today. Either way, Mari Sankofa is with us on Tuesday like we do every single week. If you're not already heard, I missed the show yesterday. If you haven't been following me on Twitter, make sure you go do that. At King underscore producer, my five-year-old fractured her tibia at a trampoline park. It's not great at all. It was on Sunday at a kid's birthday party. So we spent a lot of the time at the pediatric orthopedist yesterday, as well as getting a cast on, and it was quite the day, and I had full intentions of going down to the game yesterday, but didn't get a chance because it happened, unfortunately. Now I'm carrying her around everywhere. So that being said, this is kind of like a Monday show, and Amari is here to break it down with me. What's going on, man?
What's going on, man? It's going pretty well. I would say that.
It's better than me, right?
Another day in the life of Mark. Really sorry to hear about your daughter, but, you know, at least she's all casted up now, and hopefully in a month or two, she'll be doing a lot better. I mean, she's five, right? So
she's five. She'll be good. Look, life happens.
So by the time she's eight, she probably won't remember any of this.
Probably not. Life happens. And I just want to say I appreciate everybody who has DM'd me on Twitter, replied to me, texted me, called me, all that stuff. Like, I really do appreciate it. There's been a ton of people that just listen to the show that don't know me at all, don't know my daughter at all. So that means a lot. So I really, really do appreciate that. I told her that Twitter wants to wish her a speedy recovery, and all she knows about Twitter is that's where Dad says things to the world, as she so politely puts it. So that's all she knows about Twitter, but I did pass that along. So I appreciate that. Before we get started, I just want to say thank you to everybody. I do appreciate that. I have read everything. I've tried to respond to everybody. So, yeah, I appreciate that. And, yeah, she's not, you know, she's hurt, but she's not stupid. Like, she knows yesterday that I would have given her just about anything and took full advantage of it. I have, like, five stack of Oreos, ice cream, slushies. Like, she did everything she ever wanted to do in one day, for sure. Today, the show, we're going to do like we just do every Monday show. We're going to go through our weekend roundup, talk mostly about this Pelicans game that happened yesterday. And at the end of the show, the last segment, like we do in every Monday show, we'll have a special Monday mailbag. I'll answer the questions, and so will Amari. So that'll probably be a longer segment. So these first two segments will be pretty short. Let's get right into it, Amari. The Grizzlies finally took a loss. It feels like they haven't had a loss in forever. But when you don't really look like you want to be in the game or play defense, that will probably happen to you.
Yeah, they just kind of came out cold. You know, I think on some level they were due for a regression, you know, just because they had been completely red hot, you know, during that seven-game streak and even dating back a little bit before that. You know, you look at their numbers just during that 14-20 stretch, or not 14-20, but 14-6, and they were a top-five offense in the NBA. They were, I mean, right there really with – you know, like the Lakers, Denver, you know, teams that have some of the best offensive talents in the entire NBA. You know, and I don't say that to Doc Ja Morant or Jaren Jackson Jr. or any of the guys, but for them to play at that level for 20 straight games, you know, being a rookie and a sophomore is pretty incredible. So you figured on some level that they were going to come back to earth, and that's basically what happened. They haven't really been a great defensive team at any point this season, like at best, like their best stretch is like average. And, they weren't hitting shots. And when you're a team that's not elite defensively, that also can't hit shots. Like, that's pretty much what happened on Monday. The Pelicans, they hit a franchise high 21 three-pointers, I believe, and just a perfect storm of badness, basically, for the Grizzlies up until the last 5 minutes when they kind of realized, oh, maybe we should try to win this game. So they still have that gear in them. It's just when you're a young team, that's going to happen eventually.
Yeah, it's definitely going to happen. And like you mentioned, the defense hasn't been great all year, but we saw again kind of rear its ugly head on the game yesterday against the Pelicans. You know, Jonas really struggled against the athletic five, which I think he has done largely a lot this season. I just don't know. I don't know if it's just a combination, and this is more of a question for you, but I'm just kind of thinking out loud. I don't know if it's more of a combination of it's a team that has an athletic five, but also has the ability to take advantage of Jonas, and that's why we really haven't seen it lately, or they just done a better job of hiding him in this winning stretch, or he just has been better. What do you think it has boiled down to in terms of how they've been able to overcome that? Because before that winning stretch, it was a real problem. We saw it almost every game.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all of those things. I think, one, they've just been doing a better job of hiding them. You know, like, I still think they drop them more often than not. That hasn't been as aggressive as it was early in the year when, you know, he would drop so much that, you know, I guess the idea is that when you drop, you know, you're giving up a mid-range shot rather than allowing the point guard to penetrate. But he was dropping so much that, you know, the point guard was getting to the rim anyway. So it's kind of like
right.
The point. But, yeah, I think they've done a better job of hiding them. I think that Jaren had gotten his foul trouble under control a little bit more, really up until, like, the last couple of games or so. And we saw Jaren in most key moments a little bit more than JV. And I think, three, they also just had a run of teams that just weren't really equipped to take advantage of JV in that way. You know, like, they played, like, the Warriors. Like, of course, they're not going to do that. They played a Timberwolves team that didn't have Karl Anthony Towns. And, you know, it was just like a run of teams that didn't have I remember when they played Indiana last month, like, Malcolm Brogdon just was doing whatever he wanted. They
right.
didn't really have those types of guards. So, you know, I guess you could chalk it up to the coaching staff, you know, like, picking their battles with JV a little bit better, you know, in addition to the schedule softening a bit that made it easier to hide JV's shortcomings.
I think that's kind of where I land on it as well. I land on mostly it's he struggles with athletic bigs, and it has to be a team that has the assets to take advantage of it, i.e., like you mentioned, good heady guards, as well as the know-how that continue to, you know, take advantage of that over and over again. And so it's not every single team, but there are teams who get to those positions. And they can get into the paint, and then they can, you know, once they get into the paint, and then they can distribute from there or shoot the ball, floaters, those type of things. That's what really gets the Grizzlies into trouble with Jonas Valanciunas. I also think that they just, and I think I tweeted this yesterday along the game, is that if you just get into a situation where you can mitigate his defensive deficiencies and overcome those offensively, then you're in a better place. Like, we've seen him really dominate offensively, dominate the rebounding in some of these stretch of these wins where, you know, whatever he was doing defensively, it was being outweighed by what he was doing offensively on the offensive rebounds, defensively, all those type of things, giving him second chance points. So I think, yeah, it is a combination of things, but that's kind of where I land, is that it's mostly, you know, he struggles with athletic bigs, but it's mostly bigs and guards that know how to take advantage of this situation. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll continue talking about last night's game with Amari Sankofa right after this. We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. With Calm, you have access to the nature scenes like LeBron loves, like rain on leaves, and so much more, like sleep stories and meditations. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/lockedonNBA. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/lockedonNBA. That's calm.com/lockedonNBA. Welcome back to the show, talking with Amari Sankofa like we do every single Tuesday, which is kind of like our Monday show because we missed the show yesterday. Stay tuned. In the next segment, we'll do our Monday mailbag like we do every single week. We won't miss that for sure. The other takeaway from the Grizzlies game last night that I had, and you tell me, obviously, John Morant finished with 16 points, but there was a point in the game where John Morant, Jonas Valanciunas, and Jay Crowder had 13 points combined, and you just can't get anywhere, win any games, when three of your five starters don't score the basketball.
Yeah, that obviously wasn't ideal. One thing I would say about Ja, and he wouldn't admit to it, like once the cameras were up, but he was sniffling in the locker room after the game last night, and mentioned something about his sinuses. So he was 1-for-7 through the first three quarters, and the aggression we have seen from him for most of the season, especially this past month, he just didn't really have. But he was sick. He was sick. His energy level didn't seem to be high.
Right.
That was the direct result of Ja not feeling that well. And, he even rallied in the fourth a little bit. And, I think he went 4-of-6 or 4-of-5 or something like that, and scored 13 points to kind of help get the Grizzlies back in it. So he did improve toward the end, but yeah, Ja was sick, and the rest of the team just didn't really have that energy. And I think a lot of it starts with Ja. He's a spark plug. He'll get a big dunk or make a nice play. The crowd gets into it, and the team feeds off of that. We saw that in Cleveland when they put on that run, I believe, in the second or third quarter. Ja has that alley-oop dunk where he catches the pass from Jay Crowder. And, that was, pretty much the start of an extended run for the Grizzlies that helped them take the lead and kind of close out that game ultimately. And even Monday night, we didn't see the crowd really get into it until Ja started making some of those plays late. So that's just sort of the makeup of this team. I think everybody's had a role in them being much improved since December 1st. But at the end of the day, when you have a game where you're struggling to get some energy, struggling to get some momentum, Ja's the guy that usually provides that. And he couldn't do it for three quarters last night. And I think that's a reason, among many reasons, why they were down 25 midway through the third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, the other part of that is that if you look at the quarter breakdown, I mean, they just got run out of the gym in the second quarter. 38 to 20 points in the second quarter. And out of that, I mean, it was 29-27 in the third, 31-30 in the first. And in the Grizzlies outscored them 39-28 in the fourth. They tried to make it a comeback. But once you get down that big in the NBA, to any team, you get down that big, it is nearly impossible to come back just because, I mean, they're NBA teams. They're even the worst players on NBA teams are better than everybody else in the country, in the world. So it's just difficult once you get down that big to even remotely come back. And the Grizzlies, they tried to make it a game. Like you mentioned, Ja Morant ended up with 16 points, 9 assists, and was 35 minutes, which you could comment on that. I don't know why he's put another 35. Jay Crowder only played 18 again. He played 18, I think, a game before that as well. Jay Crowder wasn't good. But yeah, once you get down that big, it's just difficult to come back. And at least a shout-out to them. They tried to make it a game. It just – you take so much effort to get back to even, and they couldn't even do that. And once you get there, then you got to get over that hump. And it's very, very difficult and just very, very hard to do that against any team in this league. Brandon Clark, 4 points. Solomon Hill, I mean, the bench just wasn't good. That's another point to this, is that I think they've been largely really, really good over the course of this 8-game or however many game winning streak we had, 7 or 8. And they just weren't very good last night.
No, they weren't good at all. That was the worst game the bench had had in a while. And, the Grizzlies couldn't hit shots. They were this is like the second or third straight game where, you know, it seemed like they just couldn't really get a lot of momentum going from outside. And one stat I kind of liked from, you know, their recent stretch is that I think going into January, they were 0-7 in games where they hit less than 10 three-pointers. And then before last night, they were 2-0 in games where they hit less than 10, which shows that they were finding different ways to win. And, you know, I think Jonas Valanciunas kind of finding his rhythm had a big part of that because there's been nights where he's carried them. But last night, yeah, like nothing got rolling at all. You know, I don't know if having the two-day break from Friday's game and then 2 days before that, you know, you have two games and almost a week stretch. You know, maybe they just didn't have enough activity to kind of keep that momentum they had going or what it was. But, yeah, just a collective off night for the most part from everybody involved. You know, Jaren had early fouls and had to be, you know, benched pretty early. And like just everything that had been going right for them pretty much went wrong up until like that last run with 5 or 4 minutes left.
For sure. And don't get me wrong, the Grizzlies did not look like they wanted to play a game yesterday. And there are going to be games like that in the season. Like it just really, it's one of those throwaway games. Like they just didn't have it and they just weren't there. And there are going to be games throughout, especially in the middle of the season, this part with a lot of young guys in this team, especially if Ja's not feeling well, like just going to happen. But don't get me wrong, the Pelicans are a good team. Like they look fun. Like they look really fun. I'm not a Lonzo Ball fan because I like my point guards to be able to shoot the ball, but they're going to be fun, this team. And if they don't, obviously they're going to max out Brandon Ingram. I don't think he'll ever get any other offer. They got a good core going forward for them. The Grizzlies, are you on the road at the Celtics game? Is that where you're at?
Yeah, I got down to Boston earlier today.
Okay, so the Grizzlies play the Celtics tomorrow night. If you're up there, while you're up there, see if you can't get our first round pick back and bring it back home with you. That'd be nice if you could do that.
I'll see if they have it in one of the closets or something.
If you could just look around, just see what you can find. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll finish up with our last segment in our Monday mailbag, Tuesday mailbag segment on today's show. Welcome back to the show. We do this in our third mess segment every single week of the Monday show. Again, I apologize, didn't have a show yesterday, but that just means you get a double dose of Monday mailbag with myself and Amari both answering your questions. We're going to do it like this, Amari. I'll read the question, I'll give my answer, and I'll let you answer the same question. We don't have that many. We only got, I think we got 3 or 4. And then we'll just end the show after that. Let's start with from Twitter, which you've already answered, but you can expand upon already. You've given away the goods yesterday. From at God23 on, listener every week, usually sends a question every week, so I appreciate it. Any chances on your thought of Grizz getting rim-running big that can play defense out in the perimeter instead of Jonas Valanciunas next season or beyond? I'm still in the mindset that Jaren needs to stay at the four. You know, like, I understand that the Grizzlies got to have a big center. Like I'm on record on this show saying that I think the Grizzlies cannot long-term have Jonas Valanciunas in the starting lineup because I think all the disadvantages usually outweigh the advantages. And I personally think that Jonas Valanciunas could kill role players and backup centers coming off the bench. That being said, I think the starting center is already Jaren Jackson. I think the future is Jaren Jackson Jr. and Brandon Clark at the 4 and the 5. Those are your most athletic guys, and Jaren's rebounding has been better. He's been closing, I think you mentioned, he's been closing the games at center. So I think your long-term center and your power forward are already on the team. I think they're just playing in the wrong situations. Like Jaren and Brandon should be starting and Jonas coming off the bench. What about you, Amari?
I agree, you know, and I've kind of been on this train for a while, but, you know, Jaren's the starting center, and Jaren's already been closing games at center this season. You know, it doesn't really matter ultimately who starts, but who finishes, you know, like who finishes the game is more telling about what any coach, you know, including Taylor Jenkins, you know, like what they feel as far as their roster fit and, you know, where they're getting the highest quality play. And if Jaren Jackson Jr., has 4 or fewer fouls, you know, 5 minutes left, more than likely he's going to be on the court. He's closed more games than Jonas Valanciunas this season. And outside of, you know, like really like the beginning of the first and the third quarters, Taylor Jenkins has staggered their minutes. So just looking at the rotations, like, it's already pretty clear that, you know, he sees Jaren as a center. You know, I see a lot of talk about the position, you know, like, well, they need a rim runner, they need a guy who can rebound, this and that. You know, at the end of the day, Jaren projects as a high-level defender, you know, a guy that can hang with smaller players, a guy that can, you know, bang with some bigger centers, which, like, down the road, you hope he'll be able to do that without fouling too much. But especially on offense, you know, Taylor Jenkins runs a five-out offense. You know, like, Jaren Jackson Jr. has become one of the best shooters in the NBA this season. And I don't think there's any inherent advantage to having a rim-running center. Like, especially in a scheme where you want a guy that can shoot. That's the big reason why Jaren's closing games, is because he provides that spacing that Jenkins wants in his offense. If the Grizzlies had a rim-running center who could also switch and defend at a Jaren Jackson Jr. level, then maybe it would be a different conversation, because on some level, Jenkins is going to work around what he has on his roster. But what Jenkins does have is a seven-footer who's 20 years old and hitting 41% of his threes and taking seven a game, and can also play defense. That's the reason why Jaren's closing games. So I would be very surprised if, you know, going down the line, the Grizzlies decided to make a move for a different starting center and kept Jaren at the four.
All right. I think we're probably on the same page. The same guy, he hit us with a follow-up as well, since you responded to him. Which says, obviously, Jaren dealing with foul trouble, it's a bit of a challenge for him to play 40 minutes at the five. Do you think coach emphasizes offensive spacing over defensive versatility? First of all, I don't think he's playing 40 minutes at the five. No one's playing 40 minutes. That's just – it just doesn't happen, which is like – everyone always tells it like a Purdy 36 stats, and like very rarely do people play 36 minutes on a night-to-night basis. So I'll say that. First of all, I don't think he's playing 40 minutes. Second of all, Taylor Jenkins is an offensive guy. We've seen that, I think, so far throughout the season. I think that we've seen that in just in terms of what he's able to do with the offensive spacing, putting Jaren on the three-point line, in terms of just putting Jonas down deep and Jaren out on around the perimeter, having run off of screens like a freaking shooting guard. Like, there are a lot of things that he does that he wants offensive spacing. That is his thing. And so I think he'd probably weigh that over defensive versatility. But at the same time, I think he's good enough to be both. Like, he's good enough to run down, shoot the three-pointer, and get back and play defense and block shots and be someone in the middle that can anchor your defense. So, again, I think that you already have what you're looking for right in front of you. It's just going to take time. Like, he's still there to be able to, you know, mold into a five in his career. We saw it. What was the game? The Houston game, I believe, in the last few minutes, where he blocked like three shots in a row and still got down the court to be able to finish alley-oops or be able to be in part of the offense in the fast break. So I think what you're looking for is already there.
I agree with that. And I also wouldn't say that Jenkins is prioritizing, you know, spacing over defensive versatility in this sense, because Jaren gives you both. He is the better spacer on offense, and he is more versatile on defense. So, you know, Taylor Jenkins wants to emphasize either of those, you're going to go with Jaren. The only way JV is a better, you know, like, bet for any given night is if he's in an offensive groove. You know, like, he's had games when he's had like 25 points, 16 rebounds, 30, 15. When he's doing that, then you play Jonas Valanciunas, because clearly the opposing team doesn't have an answer for him. So whatever you're not getting defensively, he's making up for it on offense. And there are games when Valanciunas is good defensively, because he's better near the rim. And, you know, for whatever reason, every team's scheme or just personnel or whatever, they can't really punish him in space the way some other teams can. So on a game-by-game basis, it can vary, but in the grand scheme, Jaren is the better fit offensively and defensively, because he can do things on both sides of the court that JV can't. You know, like, Jaren is overall a better player, you know, for better – like, there's no better way to put it. Jaren's just the better guy. So I think if Taylor wants to emphasize either, then he's just going to play Jaren, and that would be that.
Last question for us is from – at John Nassif 96 on Twitter. This will probably be a little bit of a longer answer for probably from both of us. It says, from Brooks and Melton, both shining recently, what do you predict their value to be in free agency? What do you think the Grizzlies will be in a position to have to choose between the two of them? Will the Grizzlies be in a position to have to choose between the two of them? Look, I've been, if you want some deeper insight and more, I think I did a show last Monday or Tuesday. You have to look through it. It's in the title about Dylan Brooks. So go look for that if you're looking for a deep dive on Dylan Brooks. I've already done a show about that, but so I won't go too much into it. But Dylan Brooks is going to get paid. Like, Dylan Brooks is going to get paid. He's playing a position that is – it's a commodity in this league. If you always hear people always complain about, I wish we just had a shooter on the wing. I just wish we had a pure shooter. Just wish we had a playmaker. Well, like, it's difficult to come by, which is why Dylan Brooks is going to get paid. I understand that we all get frustrated with Dylan Brooks and the way he shoots, and sometimes he is a black hole. But, you know, like, I like Dylan Brooks. I know that sometimes I've been critical of what he's done, and I think everybody has at some points, because it's frustrating to watch him play sometimes. But he has an ability to score the basketball. Sometimes it will. He could shoot the three ball really, really well. And in this league, it's a commodity. And he's going to, I think, going to get probably a baseline $15 million. Like, that's just what I think he's going to get. And the Grizzlies can extend him at any time right now. I don't think he'll do it, because I think he'll probably wait to the offseason now that he's had the season that he's had. But I think that the Grizzlies will pay him. And I just think it's a situation where they have to understand, you know, who they're going to bring in. Does a trade deadline change that? If they bring in a different player that's maybe potentially better, or does he go to the bench? Is Dylan Brooks willing to go to the bench? There's a lot of questions around Dylan Brooks. I think that he's going to get paid. I don't think they're going to have to – I think – don't say they're going to have to choose, but there's going to be a line of money that the Grizzlies are willing to pay for Dylan Brooks, and then once they reach that line, I'm not sure they're going to go over it. So it just really depends. It only takes one team to screw it up for everybody and restrict your free agency. You could have a crappy team that says, hey, you know, well, you can be our shooting guard. We'll overpay. And so I don't know if that's going to happen, because I think the market's not totally there for an overpay for Dylan Brooks, but I do think he'll get paid, and I'm just not sure if that'll be more than the Grizzlies are willing to do that. And now, as far as Melton, I think you're probably looking at below a mid-level exception for Melton, so I think they'll probably keep him, no doubt about it, and it'll be pretty easy to keep him. What says you, Amari, about Dylan Brooks and De'Anthony Melton?
Yeah, I can't really speculate on what they're going to get in restricted free agency, just because I think that's a hard thing to predict, and I don't want to mislead people on exactly what kind of contracts they are going to fetch. But what I will say is that I think at this point they've both shown to be players that the Grizzlies should be willing to match just about any number for. I guess one, there's not really any such thing as an untradeable contract in the league anymore. We saw last season that Chris Paul, who's going to make $42 million soon, was traded. He was a guy that a lot of, people thought would be an impossible contract to move given his age and just given the number. And they were able to move him, and he's having a very good season in Oklahoma City. You know, if you end up paying a Dylan Brooks $15 million a year, that's fine. That's pretty much the going rate for a young shooting guard who's good on both sides of the court. You know, is he going to be a primary guy? Probably not. But a lot of teams would feel comfortable paying him somewhere within that range, given that he's 23. He's had an extended stretch of shooting better than 40% from three. He's gotten better as the season has gone on. We just saw Royce O'Neal get 4 years, 36. Dylan is a higher volume scorer than Royce O'Neal and is also a good defender. So if that's the baseline, then I think you would probably expect Dylan to get something north of a 936 deal. So if the Grizzlies have to pay him, then you probably just do it, right?
Right.
You also need contracts that you can move later on, essentially, if you want to make a swing at a star down the road. You need contracts that can make the money work. If you set a hard price limit for all your guys, you're not gonna have a roster with good bro players, so you kind of have to shell out for some guys. Anthony Melton, I can't really say what he is going to fetch in restricted free agency, but like Dylan, I think he's proven that he is a guy that's worth building around. He's probably the best wing defender on the team. He's developing as a playmaker. He's a pretty good catch and shoot 3-point shooter. And he's young, he's only 21 years old. So if Dylan and De'Anthony Melton end up fetching, combined close to $30 million a year, the Grizzlies can't afford that. You know, I can't speak for what the front office will want to do with it, but they do have the money to bring both guys back if they want to. So it just kind of comes down to how the league ends up valuing them.
Yeah, and that's and the whole situation with Dylan is and the reason I say that is it's just I've seen a lot of people say, oh well, you know, like there's a lot of negatives to Dylan Brooks. And maybe, sure, that's how you want to view it. But again, you know, it is a position, it is a skill set that is a commodity that it is always needed in this league. And I think the Grizzlies would be wise to match a $15 million year contract. I'd be okay with that. Like if you want a shooter, and again, if you have issues with the way he plays, fine. But there are not a whole lot of guys in the league that can, like you mentioned, are very good on both sides of the ball. And so I think you're right on the money. I think they'll probably would be wise to match both of those guys because they're young, they're good, and you can always trade them down the line. If that's something you need to do or want to do, you can always trade them for something different if you want to. But I think they'd be wise to go ahead and match those offers for Dylan and for D'Anthony Melton. That's our show today. I appreciate you guys hanging with us. I know it's a little later on Tuesdays than we normally do, but Amari was traveling. I was working. So we appreciate you guys hanging with us. Amari, I appreciate you doing it late. What can people read from you this week?
Yeah, so I have a story coming out on Jay Crowder hopefully tomorrow afternoon that just kind of provides some context about why he's a day one starter and just the behind-the-scenes value he's offered for this team. And then, of course, I'm on this road trip, so I'll be writing after the Celtics game tomorrow night. I'll be writing after the Pistons game Friday night. And got some good stuff coming up, so just look out for that.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. Again, go subscribe to The Athletic. Amari does a great job over there, as well as Peter, both covering the Grizzlies, as well as myself over at Lockdown Grizz on Twitter. Subscribe to the show so you don't miss shows every single day of the week. Amari, let's do it again next week.
Definitely, man.